Good morning. This is Wayne Zell, your host of Blueprint for Wealth, a very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving clients all across the Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, which contains a variety of content, video, audio, and written content on taxes, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest. The blog also contains archived radio shows from Blueprint for Wealth dating all the way back to 2007 and most recently in 2011, where we basically archive all of the shows on Federal News Radio for your interest. And lastly, I'd like to invite you to read my column in the Washington Business Journal once a month, usually the first Friday of every month, entitled Blueprint for Wealth, where we explore topics of interest in taxes, estate planning, and business planning. Today, we're going to be talking about restricted stock and restricted stock units. You need to understand that there are differences in the treatment of these animals for tax purposes. A few years ago, the Financial Accounting Standards Board issued a new release that really is starting to level the playing field for how companies have to account for the treatment of various forms of equity compensation. It's eliminating so-called variable accounting for performance-based awards that are settled in stock, and it's a very important development, and you need to talk to your accountants about that. At the same time, publicly traded companies and private companies are trying to conserve shares under their equity incentive plans, and they're trying to create retention incentives that may not be provided by stock options, which have been known in recent times to frequently go underwater. By underwater, I mean that the fair market value of the stock underlying the option is worth less per share than the exercise price of the option. So more and more of these companies are granting what we call restricted stock, and they're also considering granting restricted stock units that are settled in stock, and they're starting to experiment with different performance vesting conditions as well. While restricted stock and restricted stock units have very much in common, there are some really important tax differences between the two types of equity incentives. And it's surprised more than a few companies and a few of the executives at the companies who, when they were considering making restricted stock or restricted stock unit grants. The essence of restricted stock is that it constitutes an upfront transfer of shares of a company's stock at the time the award is made. It's subject usually to a vesting schedule that's based either on the holder's continued employment, which we call time-based vesting, or attaining certain specified individual or company performance goals, which we call performance-based vesting. Restricted stock units, on the other hand, basically amount to only a promise by the company to transfer shares of the company's stock at a later date, a later point in time, after the vesting conditions have been achieved. Now, there are similarities between restricted stock and restricted stock units. One, they are full value awards in today's parlance, and they provide the same general economics as the other. Two, under the accounting rules, they have the same accounting expense impact for the company, but only if the restricted stock units are in fact settled in stock and not cash. Number three, they're subject to the same treatment under the excessive compensation rules that disallow deductions for excessive compensation. The last point means that restricted stock or restricted stock units that are vesting based on time vesting alone do not qualify as performance-based compensation, and the value of the stock is treated as compensation subject to the $1 million deduction cap, meaning that if you have a lot of these types of time-based vesting units or time-based vesting restricted stock, the ability to deduct them may be limited because of the $1 million cap. Now, there is a big difference between restricted stock and restricted stock units. The most important difference between them is that restricted stock results in a transfer of property, and it's subject to tax under Internal Revenue Code Section 83 at the time the award is made, which means that it's considered taxable on receipt. On the other hand, restricted stock units are promises to deliver stock at some time in the future. And these may constitute what is known as non-qualified deferred compensation, which is subject to the trap of Section 409A, which means that the company could be subject to an excise tax if it doesn't qualify under the special 409A rules. And it doesn't result in a transfer of property subject to Section 83 until the stock is actually delivered. Now, this is more than just a theoretical distinction, and it really can create a bunch of problems. A holder of restricted stock is taxable on the fair market value of the stock as soon as it vests, unless the holder elects to be taxed on the fair market value of the stock when he receives the stock. There's a special election that can be made within 30 days of receiving the stock under Section 83B. The company files it and the holder signs it, and it's filed with the IRS. And that 30-day requirement is absolutely strict. In most public companies and a few private companies, holders don't make the election to avoid the risk of being taxed on compensation that they may never see, either because they forfeit the restricted stock or the value of their restricted stock drops prior to vesting. On the other hand, in startup companies and in many privately held companies, they do make this Section 83 election because the argument is that the stock is worthless as founder stock when it's granted. So it's a good time to make a Section 83B election. So this means that restricted stockholders generally are taxable when the shares vest in the absence of an 83B election. And this has two important implications for designing your restricted stock awards. First, the provision needs to be made for income taxes that have to be withheld from the holder at the time the shares vest. This is required under the law. Second, vesting for tax purposes means the first date on which the restricted stock is no longer subject to a, quote, substantial risk of forfeiture, not when restrictions are removed from the shares or the shares are delivered. So here's an example. If a restricted stockholder can retire after a stated date, let's say age 65 or age 55 with at least 10 years of prior service, the holder will be taxable on the fair market value of the stock the instant the conditions are satisfied, even if the stock isn't delivered to the holder until termination of employment. So taxable when the conditions are lifted. Restricted stock units don't result in a transfer of property until the stock is actually delivered to the holder. So RSUs, units, provide companies and executives with more flexibility to do their tax planning than restricted stock, because restricted stock units can actually vest prior to the time that the stock is actually delivered and taxable to the holder. While deferral of taxes usually is a good thing, appreciation in the fair market value of the stock above its fair market value on the vesting date is going to be taxable as ordinary income. This is in sharp contrast to the way restricted stock is treated. In contrast, restricted stock, any post-vesting appreciation is taxable as capital gains. Now, of course, if they eliminate the preferences between ordinary income and capital gains, meaning if they raise capital gains rates, this distinction becomes less important. Importantly, RSUs, restricted stock units, that defer payment after vesting constitute non-qualified deferred compensation. What this means is that the RSUs may be subject to Section 409A unless the deferral is a short-term deferral. For calendar year companies, that means it has to be distributed by March 15th of the year following the year in which the RSUs vest. Now, needless to say, the rules relating to restricted stock units, stock options, incentive stock options, non-qualified options, stock appreciation rights, and phantom stock are all different, and they all have different applications and different uses in equity compensation arrangements. But like I said, restricted stock has taken on increased importance, particularly as stock options, which have strike prices above the fair market value of the stock, are underwater. If you'd like to know more about restricted stock and restricted stock units, please give one of our attorneys who have expertise in this area a call at 703-218-2100. And if you'd like to read about this on my blog, please subscribe to the blog by dialing into www.blueprintforwealth.org, or you can also visit our website at Odin Feldman and Pittleman at ofplaw.com. I'm Wayne Zell. You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth, which is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman.